You know, we're part of the United States. I wonder how come us Alaskans have to pay so much.
Residents in Northwest Alaska feel the pinch of high fuel prices. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 27th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Coast Guard continues their ramp up in the Arctic.
This summer, I'm looking more toward Nome than ever. We're going to bring smaller boats to the North Slope and Barrow.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
A political action committee has been formed around Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, called Sarah PAC. The group says it will raise money for local and national political candidates who share the governor's ideas and goals for the country. The Washington Post says the paperwork has been completed, but it's not official yet. Joining us from Juneau is APRN's Dave Donaldson. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
Dave, does this indicate that Governor Palin is getting ready for a run for higher office?
Not necessarily, but probably likely, maybe. As of right now, we are not certain that she is the one who formed it, or we don't know how much she will actively be involved in its operations. Had no comments that we've gotten, nor have we gotten them from any other news source that has actually talked to the governor. It doesn't advocate her running for office, only other candidates, and her staff in Alaska says they've had no dealings with it, and they haven't talked to the governor about it at all. Now, that said, if it is something that belongs to the governor, it is important. A lot of candidates have used this route to find support for their own campaigns. It gets allies into office who will someday support them, and it also can pay for some of their expenses. So, it could indicate that. The closest source to it is the Associated Press says that an unidentified aide, and we presume it's her staff somewhere, says the governor is going back to Washington this weekend, and she will get active in national politics after the legislative session is over. So that's as far as we've gotten with it, and we're just looking for confirmation right now.
What's been the reaction in the Capitol?
Well, it hasn't been positive. So far, no legislators have had really much to say about it because not many of them know about it as it came suddenly. But, one thing that nearly all of them were talking about last week, just before and after the State of the State speech, is that they wanted to see her focus on Alaska issues, Alaska concerns, and to talk to Alaskans. That's what she was elected to do. I don't think anybody is going to be content with just a speech and then watch her turn around going national again. I think that wouldn't rest well at all within the legislature.
Well, let's us focus back on Alaska and the legislature.
Good. I like that.
There have been several major issues that have come to light so far this session, and a lot of different points of view. One of the major ones you were expecting to come up deals with the state's retirement system. Is that still a major issue?
It will be very soon. The bill that has been introduced would change the state employee retirement plan back to what it used to be before the Frank Murkowski administration. What state agencies are finding is that it's very difficult to hire qualified people without offering them a pension. And one manager pointed out to me that the plan actually encourages qualified people to leave the government and to leave Alaska. She says, well, we're losing the best ones. She said people will get vested after they've served 4 or 5 years in the plan, and then they take that to another state where there's a guaranteed pension afterwards and, get the best of both worlds. This is going to be a very high-profile issue before the end of the session. I understand that it will be within just a matter of a couple of weeks. It'll be out before committees and being seriously debated.
Another early issue, Dave, was setting up capital punishment in the state's legal system. Where's that?
Nothing yet. I kind of expected it to all of a sudden leap forward itself. I still think it will at some point. We've got some pretty pressing issues right now as far as just getting started on things. But, you know, House Speaker Mike Chenault, who sponsored it, has not pushed for it yet. But I think that if not this year, then it's still got one more year on the thing. I think that it'll happen.
And finally, people that are concerned about the state's investment of businesses that operate in the Sudan, there's been some legislation that was introduced in the past that would get rid of that. That's got new support, and it was scheduled for this week, but didn't happen. Is it in trouble?
Oh, not at all. What happened is that they had to cancel or postpone the hearing this week just because of the weather here in Juneau. Some flights didn't get in, and that was it. It has actually been scheduled again for later this week. The fact is that the governor came out publicly in support of it during her national vice presidential campaign. That's got it. I think that, you know, the problem is, you know, the genocide that's going on in Darfur, a region of Sudan. And I think that we're going to see a lot of people who right now, because the governor has supported it and because of some fresh looks at it, I think we're going to see some heads turned on this one. And this will affect state investments, retirement funds, the permanent fund, a whole lot of things. And I think that we will definitely hear about this one, and it'll be later this week.
All right, Dave, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from Juneau. Immonek State Senator is predicting quick legislative action to help people meet the high cost of fuel in rural Alaska. However, that optimism is not shared by other rural lawmakers. Donnie Olson of Golovin says he was disappointed yesterday when the Palin administration announced it couldn't find a way to declare an economic disaster in the village. A poor economy and high fuel prices have forced some residents there and in other parts of rural Alaska to make a decision between fuel and food. Olson says he anticipates seeing legislation introduced this week that would make an emergency appropriation to specifically address the problem in Immonek.
There are avenues to go ahead and follow that you can try and get things done more immediate than waiting a long time. Because obviously in this situation, if we do hit a cold snap, then we are going to need something quick sooner than later.
Olson says he is afraid that someone will die from the cold or that large parts of communities will burn as people try to keep warm by building fires that could get out of control. However, Senate Finance Co-Chair Lyman Hoffman of Bethel says he has found that such proposals do not have the support needed to get them through the legislative process in time to provide assistance this year. After the administration's announcement yesterday, Hoffman visited with the governor's staff.
After the press conference, I went down and talked to Mike Nysick, and you know, I think that the final decision on what they're going to be doing, whether or not they're going to give vouchers, remains to be seen. Hopefully, they make a decision expeditiously.
Hoffman says one option that could be done now would be to issue vouchers for fuel. There's also some investigation into how the power cost equalization program could be used. He says he is ready to reintroduce a bill that passed the Senate, but not the House, last year that would cap heating oil prices at $3 a gallon, with the state paying the difference. He says there is not enough legislative support to begin that program for this winter. Kotzebue's Reggie Jewell is ready to use his majority status to help get relief through the House, but he says those legislators involved in the issue need to get together with one plan, adding that a knee-jerk reaction will not get the support they need. He says whatever they find will have to be a long-term solution.
We've got, you know, 3 or 4 months to go before winter really releases itself, and even longer before we see the price of fuel begin to drop. And we tried to make this argument in last year's special session, but unfortunately, you know, oftentimes the legislature puts a glass slipper on that doesn't fit all parts of the state. We have this Cinderella syndrome that doesn't work very well.
Both Jewell and Senator Olson point to the energy assistance offered by Venezuela to Alaska villages. Olson says a similar program could work in the state. Jewell says it's an example of what Alaska could and should be doing. Residents of the northwest Alaska village of Noatak felt the pinch of extreme fuel prices over the weekend. The Noatak native store ran out of fuel and had to have some barrels and tanks of heating fuel and gas flown in. Store employee Rosella Marsden says the price was $14 a gallon for both heating fuel and gas on the weekend. She says prices are back to $8.99 for gas and $10.99 for stove oil currently. Marsden says it's hard to get by and there are little resources.
Because there's just a few companies and few people has jobs, and I would say it's hard, you know. We have no choice. I mean, we have, what are we going to buy, groceries or stove oil, you know?
Noatak is north of Kotzebue, and when they run out of fuel, they have it flown in from there. Marsden says many people burn 2 drums of fuel per month at a cost of $476 per barrel. She says grocery prices have also been driven up.
Per box of Sailor Boy crackers, almost $9. And those eggs cost almost $7 too, just those 12-pack.
Marsden says some Noatak residents burn wood, but most are dependent on heating fuel. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, feeding the eagles in Homer will continue, but not for long.
We strongly encourage the city to prohibit all feeding of bald eagles after this winter.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Great weekdays begin with the most up-to-date local news and information on APRN's Alaska Morning News. The Alaska Morning News, the news you wake up to.
Canada will soon undertake its most ambitious effort yet to map the Arctic Ocean seabed. Canada has until 2013 to submit its claim under the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. It's hoping to extend its sovereignty over a vast area of the Arctic Ocean and the resources found there. The CBC's Patricia Bell reports.
4 years until the deadline. Dr. Jacob Verhoef says that isn't a lot. Verhoef is in charge of Canada's mapping effort. He says there's still much to do, and the work this year will continue almost nonstop from mid-March until mid-September. Canada will team up with Denmark on a project north of Ward Hunt Island, another in the Labrador Sea, and on a special aerial survey off of Alert. Then Canadian scientists will switch partners and work with the United States on icebreakers for 42 days to map the seabed in the Beaufort Sea. Jacob Verhoef.
With the last 2 or 3 years, you can see we started very slow and we built it up. And I think this year is probably the year of maximum activities.
A lot will depend on the ice conditions. That's why the Canadian Ice Service is contributing its expertise. Doug Bancroft is the service's director. He says it's also allowing the service to verify its satellite images from RadarSat-2.
This is an exciting opportunity because you have personnel on the ground and other equipment that's operating at the same time as a satellite. So it's an opportunity to get a validation of some of the new techniques that are evolving with these new tools.
An autonomous underwater vehicle will be tested at Alert in April. Scientists hope to use the devices to map remote areas in the Arctic Ocean next year.
That story was from the CBC's Patricia Bell. As interest in Arctic waters continues to ramp up, the United States Coast Guard has a lot of work to do in prepping itself for future Arctic operations, and Nome will play a leading role in those efforts. Paul Korchin from KNOM reports.
Rear Admiral Gene Brooks commands the Coast Guard 17th District in Alaska. He returned to Nome this past week for a visit, hosting Vice Admiral David Pekoski, the Pacific Area Commander. Brooks indicated their Arctic operations this past summer brought several challenges into focus. including non-existent or limited port, hangar, and housing facilities for Coast Guard personnel in Nome, Kotzebue, and Barrow. Nevertheless, Brooks indicated to city officials his Coasties will certainly be back.
This summer, I'm looking more toward Nome than ever. We're going to bring smaller boats to the North Slope and Barrow. We have some boats in the Coast Guard that are lighter, smaller, designed for ice operations in the Great Lakes. Because of the lack of hangars in Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow, aviation is not as good. We look to continue the C-130s probably for longer periods of time in Nome. We're considering bringing a boat detachment to Nome. We can bring the normal heavy boats here because you have the facilities.
Brooks told city leaders the warming Arctic is not yet choked with ships, but that's expected to change over the coming years.
We envision in the next 20 to 30 years, the Bering Strait will become a major traffic route. If ships can go over the top of the world, it's half the distance for a ship going from China to Europe or Europe to China, rather than go through the Panama Canal or the Suez. If you can go over the top, it's much easier. That makes the Bering Strait the main choke point on the planet.
A big part of the emerging Arctic waters puzzle will be just figuring out who's in the neighborhood.
I've got to be able to tell who's doing science and who's doing commercial fishing. And then I've got the whole foreign issue. When the Chinese come through or the Japanese come through, as they did last summer, what are they coming to do? What are the Russians up to?
It will fall chiefly, but not exclusively, to the U.S. Coast Guard to function as the marine traffic cop for the region.
There are things that we can do, vessel traffic systems, that are designed to keep ships from colliding with each other, keep ships from running aground. We have these in Seattle. We have them in San Francisco. We envision in the 10-year-plus time frame, we will need a vessel traffic service for the Bering Strait. But the challenge of the Bering Strait is it's going to have to be a joint deal with Russia, because Russia has half of the Bering Strait.
Pekoski stressed the Coast Guard wants its growing presence in the Arctic to be a transparent process.
Seeking a lot of dialogue and a lot of input from all the communities up here so that we understand, hey, what are the requirements that you see? And as we develop a master plan for everything, that you can see the totality of what the Coast Guard has put together and then how we propose to deal with it.
Brooks said George Bush's presidential directive just before he left office represents a policy upgrade toward the Arctic, viewing it not only in scientific terms, but also from transportation, resource development, and national security perspectives. The admiral noted a lesson they've learned from this past summer's Arctic operations involves the importance of outreach to Alaska's indigenous peoples. The Coast Guard says effective and culturally sensitive engagement will render thousands of years of native knowledge available for improving the learning curve of new arrivals to the north. In Nome, I'm Paul Korchin.
The work of Homer's Eagle Lady will go on for another 2 months at least. The Homer City Council passed an emergency ordinance last night allowing the continued feeding of eagles on the Homer Spit. The feedings were supposed to stop when Jean Keen passed away earlier this month, but the council's actions allow her assistant, Steve Tarola, to feed the eagles in her place and extends the special permit she was operating under until March 27th. After that, the city council will have to decide whether or not eagle feeding will be permitted next winter. Keen was famous around the world for her eagle feeding program, which traditionally lasted from early January to the middle of April every year. If she hadn't passed away, her special permit would have expired in 2010. Will Meeks is the acting manager for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. He read a statement from Russell Oates, director of the Fish and Wildlife Service's Division of Migratory Bird Management.
The Division of Migratory Bird Management supports the concept of an ordinance that would allow continued winter feeding of bald eagles until March 27, 2009, under controlled conditions. We would oppose any additional feeding sites or increases in food that would result in the attraction of more eagles. We strongly encourage the city to prohibit all feeding of bald eagles after this winter.
Meeks went on to describe some of the problems eagle feeding can create.
Supplemental feeding of bald eagles stimulates competitive aggressive behavior that can result in serious injuries or death to eagles and can create problems to other wildlife and people. Persons that create feeding situations resulting in eagle injuries or deaths are in violation of federal law. Eagles will be far better off foraging for themselves naturally on the landscape.
Tarola himself addressed the council, saying he wanted to correct a myth about the feeding of eagles.
And that is when it comes March, the eagles regulate themselves. They start leaving on their own. One day in March, half of them will be gone. So the amount of food that they will receive is kind of governed by whether they're there or not, not by how much food's put out.
Tarola declined to comment on tape after the council's decision, saying simply, it's what Gene would have wanted. Others who testified expressed concern over the city council's use of an emergency ordinance, saying the situation isn't an emergency. The ordinance passed unanimously.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just Pick, Click, Give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
The Yukon Quest has again delayed a withdrawal date to allow mushers more time to decide whether they'll race while organizers scramble to build up the purse. As of last month, entries stood at 40, one of the largest fields in the race's history, but it's since fallen to 32. Four-time and reigning Yukon Quest champion Lance Mackey has dropped out, and last year's runner-up Ken Anderson says he also plans to withdraw. Anderson says there are several reasons for his decision, including likely reduced winnings.
I have to look at the prize money and whether it's worth my time to beat myself down the Yukon Quest Trail 10 days before the Iditarod, which, you know, of course the Iditarod is the main focus. It's got a lot more prize money, a lot more notoriety, and it's for the solvency of our kennel, we have to focus all of our efforts there.
Despite the loss of last year's top two finishers, Anderson says the Quest should be a great race given the number of competitive mushers still signed up.
I mean, Martin Boozer, that's going to be exciting to watch him race. John Little is back with a really nice team. I raced against him earlier. And Brent Sass is a newcomer that's really turning heads. And then all the usuals. I mean, Hans, Sebastian, Hugh Neff, William Clayton, Michelle Phillips is doing better and better every year, Dave Dalton. It's still going to be it might even be more competitive than last year.
Anderson says it will be hard being on the sidelines, and he hopes to run the Quest again in the future. He says the poor economy is hitting all sled dog races, including the Iditarod, which he says has also seen its purse decline. So far, the Quest purse is at $150,000, $50,000 shy of the $200,000 promoted earlier. Race organizers say there's still the potential that more sponsors will sign on and pump up winnings before the February 14th start date. Mushers have until January 30th to withdraw and only lose $150 of the $1,500 entry fee. Meanwhile, the Yukon Quest Trail is shaping up. A group of trailbreakers punched through the stretch of the race route from Fairbanks to Eagle last week. Some members of the Wrangell Assembly are expressing hope that their community and Petersburg can work together on a proposed hydroelectric plant near Petersburg. The Ruth Lake proposal is one of several recent power issues that have caused a political rift between the two close neighbors. This month, Petersburg City Council and the Wrangell Assembly each voted unanimously to apply for an exclusive federal permit for rights to the project. But as KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports, Wrangell's Borough Assembly may reconsider.
The Wrangell Borough Assembly voted unanimously this month to pursue a preliminary federal permit to develop a hydropower plant at Ruth Lake in the mountains of Thomas Bay near Petersburg. But Wrangell Mayor Don McConaughey says the issue will be back on the agenda at the Assembly's next meeting.
It is going to be brought back up again. I've asked for it to be back on the next agenda because there is a few things in that resolution that we as an Assembly didn't get a chance to look at in depth. And also the public has not had a chance to comment on that particular resolution either. So I've asked for it to be brought back at next Tuesday's meeting, and there's a few things that need to be worked out.
Petersburg officials responded with disappointment earlier in the month when they heard Wrangell had decided to file for a Ruth Lake permit. The permit is exclusive. Only one entity can win it, and Petersburg has been preparing to file its own application to FERC for the past several months. The council reaffirmed that decision this past week with a vote to turn in the completed application to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. McConaughey says he's in full support of Petersburg's permitting effort.
I know that Petersburg started quite some time ago in pursuing the FERC permit for Ruth Lake, and I know that they also invited Wrangell to be part of that effort. Our assembly voted against that, but I fully support Petersburg in going ahead and doing their Ruth Lake permit. I think it's a good thing. I think it could benefit the area, not just Petersburg, but the Southeast Alaska area.
McConaughey says he'd like Petersburg and Wrangell to work together on Ruth Lake. The two communities have partnered for decades as the Thomas Bay Power Authority. The authority manages the Tyee Hydroelectric Plant, which powers both towns. More recently, though, the two local governments have been at odds over a Bellingham, Washington company's proposal to develop a series of its own hydropower plants at three mountaintop lakes in Thomas Bay, including Ruth Lake, Senior Lake, and Swan Lake. Petersburg's council and residents strongly objected to the potential environmental impacts of such a large project in the popular bay, as well as the potentially private outside ownership of the local resource. However, Wrangell's assembly majority chose to work with Cascade Creek LLC in the hopes that it could lead to economic development through an eventual road and electric link to British Columbia, something that Cascade Creek would need in order to sell power to Canada in the lower 48. Assemblymember Ernie Christian has been an advocate for Wrangell's involvement with the private company, which has offered to provide the borough with the information it needs to apply for the Ruth Lake permit. The company still holds that permit until its expiration next month. But Christian says he also supports Petersburg's decision to apply for the Ruth Lake permit. He says that provides two chances for a nearby town to win rights to the project, since the process is open to any applicant in Alaska or elsewhere.
I think by both Wrangell and Petersburg submitting an application, that gives us a chance to have some local input, local control on what happens with that potential facility there. Not saying that it's not like a foregone conclusion that Petersburg or Wrangell will get that permit. So I think it just gives us a better chance.
Christian does not object to the Ruth Lake issue coming back before the assembly for public discussion, but he's not planning on changing his vote. If Petersburg wins the permit, though, and pursues a publicly owned project, he thinks Wrangell would still like to be involved.
I don't see a problem working with Petersburg in terms of getting public money and, of course, putting it out to bid and having somebody build it for the communities of Wrangell and Petersburg and potentially having Thomas Bay Power Authority manage it for the communities. I think that'd be a good thing.
In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Wrangell Assembly is expected to take up the issue at its meeting this evening. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Paul Korchin in Nome, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Casey Kelly in Homer, and the CBC's Patricia Bell. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. If you're an artist who expresses yourself creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance, you may be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant. You can learn more online at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.